Welcome to CYC Podcast Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 96. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. Spring has officially come to the Northern Hemisphere, and as a teacher in the West, this means the end of the academic year. During this time, I look forward to hearing about new research created by CYC students around the world. If you are finishing up or supervising someone completing a thesis connected to child and youth care, and you think it deserves a wider audience, and I think most research does, please get in touch with me through www.cycpodcast.org. I am always interested in having conversations about new findings that may impact how we work with young people. And today, I'll be doing just that. I'm speaking with Amanda Riley, who recently graduated from McEwen University in Edmonton, Alberta, with a bachelor's in child and youth care, receiving the President's Medal for Academic Excellence and Student Leadership, I might add. In 2016, from May to July, she did a practicum in New Zealand, Aotearoa, where she worked on a piece of research about school buses. Amanda shared her writing with me, and after reading it, I was quite struck, and I asked if she would come onto the podcast to talk some more about it. Thank you so much for joining me today, Amanda.
No problem.
So I'd like to ask you to start, why did you decide to study school buses?
So, well, firstly, the person who connected me to New Zealand is Leon Fulcher, mm-hmm. who has been on your podcast before.
He certainly has.
He lives in an area about 45 minutes outside of where I did my practicum in Wairoa. And he saw a trend in his community where he was seeing young people drop out of high school. And he thought it might have been to do with the long school bus rides that they had to take.
Why did how did he come up with that hypothesis?
Because I think just talking, because if you know Leon, he's a conversationalist.
He certainly is.
So he'll talk to community members and even the young people themselves. And I think he kind of just saw a trend.
Hmm.
So he suggested that it might be of value to look into it. And I learned that about 30% of the student population bus to school every day, some busing up to 2 hours each way.
Wow. 2 hours each way. That's a long bus ride. And did you find, I don't think your research really went into this a whole bunch, but did you find that there was a connection between high school dropping out and school bus rides?
It was interesting because most of the students that I spoke to stated that busing was just a part of their everyday life, so they didn't really see it as affecting them. But a question that I had was, is this just because students, they all see it that way? Is it because the students who do struggle with bus rides are the ones not attending school? Or is it because I'm an outsider and they weren't comfortable speaking to me about their feelings?
Mm-hmm. Let's take a few of those apart. Is there any indication that people who do ride on the bus, that they're more likely to graduate because they're more committed to school, for example?
Well, I'll give you an example. So I shadowed four students, each of them riding on each of the buses that I took. And there was this one young lady. Her course load was like all academic courses, no sort of elective courses. She strived to be an engineer in the Navy. Her bus ride was the 2 hour long bus ride each way. She also played three sports, so did extracurriculars 4 nights a week. And I just found her resiliency amazing, because if I did that much, I don't think I would be able to keep up with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it could go one of two ways. Mm-hmm. You could either see the challenge and face up to it, or you could see the challenge and shy away and end up dropping out of school.
Right. You write that in other research that you looked at, there is a correlation between academic achievement and school bus riding. And as I understood it, the greater the amount of school bus riding, the lower the grades. Is that correct?
I didn't find anything specifically when I was shadowing the students, mm-hmm. but I was more looking at personal stories rather than the actual evidence, because what I was trying to do was open a doorway and provide the teachers and the personnel at the school more insight to everyday experiences.
And what were the stories? What did people say about their rides?
A lot of them said that their bus rides were just everyday experiences that they had to do to go to school, which I was kind of shocked about, because if I had to get up every morning and go 2 hours on a bus to do 6 hours of classes and then do two more hours on a bus, I would probably not go into it with a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm. You write about how tired you were just doing it a few different times. I mean, you wrote on four different routes, and how difficult it was for you, you know, even with those short amounts of times.
Exactly. And I had an invested interest in completing my practicum hours on time. So if I was if I was a student and it was just missing one day because I was a little bit sick, then that 2 hour bus ride would definitely stop me from going in.
You said you weren't sure how people responded, perhaps because you were an outsider. Mm-hmm. What was your experience being from another country, another culture, another ethnicity, and riding on the bus?
Well, it was interesting joining their culture in the first place, just because they do things so differently than what I'm accustomed to. So, for example, on my first day, I was asked to join a welcoming ceremony, where they brought me into, excuse my butchering of how I say it. It's been a while since I've heard any Maori words, but I think it's pronounced Whērinui, which is their meeting house. Mm-hmm. They had me go into the meeting house, and I had to sit behind a bunch of men because of protection reasons, while someone talked for about 20 minutes in Maori, just welcoming me there. And then I was asked to hangi, which is essentially pressing your forehead and nose against the other person's and breathing in so you can share the breath of life. Mm. I shook hands with all of them, and I did this with many students. So that was kind of them, like, greeting me into their culture. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I think they were just like any students would be meeting a new person. At first, when I would approach them on the bus, they were a little bit cautious, like, who are you? Why are you here? But I took the time to explain all of that before I started asking them questions. One particular moment was quite interesting, because I had talked to the students, explained who I was, and they didn't really answer any of my questions, so I decided to just go back, sit somewhere else, and kind of observe the culture. But a few minutes later, one of the students approached me, asked me a personal question, went back and reported to his group, and then came back, asked me another question, and went back and reported to his group. So finally, I asked if they wanted me to come back and sit there so they could ask me questions and we could have a conversation, which I found kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's a great example of, you know, when we go in with the questions, people, you know, who are you? Why are you asking questions? Right. The idea of whoever asks the questions has the power. And so when they take over the questioning, I wonder if there's a sense of autonomy and a sense of power on their part. Was it able to shift a bit more into a conversation after that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, I got some of the most interesting information from that group. A student was telling me he was year 7, which would be equivalent to our grade 6. And he told me about how he had recently been expelled from the college that I was doing my practicum at because he had brought drugs to the school to sell to other students.
And so when he'd been expelled, what happened to him? Was he going to a different school now?
Yeah, he was going to a different school that, so the bus picked him up one stop before it stopped at the college.
And was your sense that there's a place for, you know, child and youth care practitioners or social workers or other supportive allies on the bus? And I want to talk about drivers in a moment, but do you think there's a place for CYCs on a school bus?
I think so, because I'm still left kind of uncertain of where the college should go with my information, just because I think if you're wasting 4 hours a day on a school bus and still expecting the young person to do homework, I think that maybe there's a way that the bus ride could be made more meaningful. I just don't know how that is, because in New Zealand, if you're not aware, the 90% of the roads pretty much are very windy and you can very easily get motion sick. So a lot of the students who wanted to do homework couldn't because they felt ill doing it.
I mean, in the best of circumstances, I have a difficult time doing a whole lot of reading on bus rides. So,
Another thing is that here in Edmonton, one of my previous classmates actually did a practicum. I think the program was called Art Start, and it was practitioners doing arts and crafts with students from elementary schools in lower income areas.
And where do you see the connection there?
That is one way that I think the agency was E4C. That's one way that they made the bus ride a little bit more meaningful for elementary students.
Oh, so they were doing crafts, arts on the bus.
Yes.
Oh, nice. That's great. I've never heard of that before. When Leon connected us, and when he mentioned this project, I'm someone who's never took a school bus as part of my commute, my ride to school, and so it's not a world that I think of a whole lot. Other than I've worked with a variety of people over the years who talk about being on the short bus and. And it was fascinating. I worked with one group of folks and it became this identity that they formed. They're like, oh, I was a short bus kid too. And so there was this real camaraderie around this notion of the short bus. And for those people who are not familiar with it, it's a bus specifically for students with cognitive, behavioral, emotional, you know, physical challenges, and they need extra support. You said that 30% of the students in New Zealand were taking the school bus. Was there any stigma around students who take the school bus and students who didn't take the school bus?
Not that I noticed. Just because that area of New Zealand is incredibly rural. So the communities that the students bused out to didn't even have supermarkets. You would have to, Leon, for example, has to drive 45 minutes in order to get to a supermarket. So I think that's just their culture there, and they're used to students having to go on buses in order to get to school.
You wrote in your paper that, like many Indigenous people, Maori have a history of colonization and broken treaties, which have influenced who they are today. Do you see any of that as part of school bus culture and having to take a school bus and where Maori live and where schools are?
it's hard to say because it's something that you see so evidently just being there. The fact that Te Māori, which is their language, has to be taught in a class and only a very small percentage of students speak it, and English is the dominant language, I think it's just so evident overall that it's hard not to see it on a school bus, if that makes sense. Because it's just so evident everywhere that it just transfers onto the school bus.
Absolutely. Is the students on the school bus, are they a mixture of Maori and non-Maori, or is it predominantly one group or another?
So I don't remember the specific number, but I think out of 600 students in the school, there was only 90 that didn't identify as Maori. So the area that I was doing my practicum in, Wairoa, is a very predominantly Maori community.
Right.
Overall.
Right.
Yes.
Right. That's who's going to be on the school bus as well.
Yeah.
I was struck by the drivers. There are some drivers who seemed super connected and had relationships with the students, and students would occasionally stay at their house if, you know,
absolutely,
if there were issues, and other drivers who seemed to, you know, were civil, but not engaged. And then there's another driver who was actually a teacher in one of the schools. What did you find observing and talking with the drivers?
I found that the students, specifically the 2i bus, that driver, he had such a good relationship with all of the students. He would call each one or say hello to each one of them by name as they stepped on the bus. If he noticed a student wasn't on the bus, he would ask one of the other students, "Oh, where's so-and-so today?" He bent the rules in order to allow students to eat food on the bus because he understands that not everybody has time to get up and have breakfast in the morning. And the atmosphere on that bus was so warm and welcoming that I think he would be an encouragement for the students to get up in the morning and get on the bus. One of the other bus drivers, like you mentioned, when students don't have a place to stay overnight, if they're doing an extracurricular and have to stay in town later than the bus leaves, she would offer for them to stay at her home. Because she had been so intertwined in that community, she had been driving the same route since the 80s, so a lot of the parents knew her as well. She told me a very interesting story about how when she first started in the 80s, there was a lot of gang violence on her bus because she picked up from two neighboring communities that had different gangs. And I guess she ended up stopping it because she would kick the student off of the bus and make them walk home during a time where there was no cell phones. And it's quite a long distance.
I bet. So, 2-hour drive. That's a long walk.
Yeah. So she ended up stopping the gang violence and has never had any problems just because they know who she is. And they also have that relationship with her as well.
How did parents respond when she kicked students off the bus and made them walk home?
I guess they would show up the next morning with the child when the child was being picked up for to go to school. And she would explain what happened and the parent would consequence the child. And I think that's why it stopped, because the parents were also intervening.
It's an approach that I would rarely take, and yet it seems very effective in this case, and it's so intriguing to me when I come across situations like that, you know, which I think of as a very punishing sort of approach, and yet it's apparently very, you know, very effective, providing they still went on the bus and still went to school and didn't just,
Yes.
You know, quit school, which would be the wrong response. So maybe the role of the driver, so less having a CYC sitting on the bus, although I'm quite intrigued with the idea of the art projects on the bus, but the role of the driver as that person alone can really influence the culture on the bus.
Absolutely, yes.
And how about the teacher?
Oh, he didn't necessarily have the same kind of personable relationship with the students, but he was one of the those teachers in the school that everybody just respected because he was kind of considered like an elder. So all of the students just had that respect for him. So there was no issues on his bus. It was actually a very relaxed ride, except for the actual bus itself.
Right, which was not so relaxed.
No, the bus that he was driving was the oldest in the fleet, and the suspension was apparently very small. And that made the bus feel like it was rocking back and forth quite violently. Hey. And add in wind and a windy road, I felt unsafe on the bus, and it gave me quite bad motion sickness, even after I had taken medication.
Right, wow. So what's happening with the research now that you've completed it, passed it on to Leon, and he's working with it? What's happening with it?
So at the moment, we're waiting from a short paragraph from the school, just explaining what they are intending to do with the research, and then it's going to be published. In addition, Leon has passed it on to a friend of his who's working in the Ministry of Education, and he's trying to pass it along to some of his colleagues to see if there can be any change there. I think what we want the most is for some more in-depth research to be done so that they can figure out strategies to make, because these kids right now, in their situations, they're living in a lower socioeconomic area, and there's a lot of stigma around Maori people still. So they're in a similar place as Aboriginal peoples are here, where the drugs, the violence, the alcohol, that kind of stuff, higher prison rates as well. So we just want to see how can we make it be one less hurdle for the children to get to school.
Absolutely.
Because I see having an extra 4 hours a day on a bus is just one more hurdle for them to have a quality education and be successful in life. And I just want to know what can we do in order to make that hurdle seem less big.
Yeah. It's a great piece of work that you did, Amanda. I really enjoyed reading it. It's not a topic that I have thought much about at all, and it raised a lot of questions for me and a lot of thoughts for me, and understanding the impact that it has on people was quite revealing. So and it was beautifully written as well, I might add. You have quite a nice way of writing. So it was quite an engaging story, stories to read as well.
Something that I actually wanted to bring up. So right now I'm working with teens in a group home setting. And prior to leaving and doing this investigation, I had never really thought about busing, even in the city, because that's where I am, as something that was really important. And recently I started working with a youth who has an alphabet soup diagnosis. She has many things like FASD, ODD, that kind of stuff. And so a lot of the schools in our area rejected her as a student So she's forced to go to a school that requires her to take a bus, a city bus, for an hour and a half.
Wow.
And that for me just struck me as interesting because I had never really thought about busing before I did this investigation. Yet students in the city, too, are facing the same kind of hurdles.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Excellent point. Just because it's not a big yellow bus or in New Zealand, they're white buses. But just because it's not a big school bus doesn't mean that it's not having tremendous impact. It's an excellent point, right? How do we support students? How do we recognize those obstacles for students?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And particularly if it's young people that are already struggling, like in the story that you just told, you know, these are people that need extra support, not extra hurdles and extra barriers.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with me today, for sending the thesis to me, and for agreeing to do this interview. It's raised a lot of really intriguing thoughts and questions for me, and hopefully for other listeners as well, to ponder, you know, what are the impacts of these decisions that we make, administrative decisions, and how can we support people, whether it's being there, whether it's in our hiring of school bus drivers, whether it's doing arts-based activities on a school bus or something else. Any parting words, Amanda?
Be insightful and put yourself in the kids that you're working with shoes. And sometimes it doesn't even seem like they're going through a lot. But if you put yourself in their shoes and see what they have to go through on a daily basis, sometimes you realize that they do experience a lot.
Absolutely. And I think the idea of sitting on the school bus with them for 2 hours each way, if all teachers were doing that, you know, a few times, then we would have an appreciation for what students go through.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, and I hope the publication goes well, and many more people read the research.
Thank you so much.
Bye bye.
Bye.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.